Trying to recover from a chronic illness can be very difficult, especially when you step into the wrong kind of things, the wrong kind of information, and engage yourself in all these myths that are in the end just a giant waste of time. And they might seem to work in the beginning, but why is that exactly? So in this video, I'd like to bust all of them. I hope that after this video, you know exactly what to do and how not to fall into the trap of believing these kinds of things. Therefore, I have to share some scientific knowledge, stories, I'll do whatever I can for you to know exactly what to do. My name is Daniel and I'm a recovery coach. I used to have a chronic illness myself. Now I'm having the release program online in which I aim to really pick the root problem and remove it, to make people experience an instant relief in symptoms. And when Annelie joined this program, she found herself grateful to get long COVID, to be given the opportunity to see life in a different way. And even though she's still in the journey of recovery, the program changed her life, and she's now able to enjoy life again in a much more joyful and peaceful way. And this also sort of talks a little bit about another myth, a myth that I don't even that I didn't even plan to talk about, the myth of the magic recovery, the moment in your life when you've fully re-recovered. It doesn't work like that. Symptoms can come and go, and I'll explain everything about that in this video. And it's not really about having symptoms, it's about how you deal with it to make sure that they don't last a very long time. Then I'd like to talk about the baseline myth. Each of these bars, they represent the amount of energy that someone with a chronic illness spends during their days. And on the first day, it's quite a lot. The second day, there is a setback. She gradually builds herself up and down. And then there is a peak day in which she needs to do a lot, and then she falls down. So in order to deal with that crazy ups and downs, which can give a lot of insecurity to your system and setbacks, the idea has become to create a baseline, to sort of do every day more or less the same kinds of things. And that might give you a form of safety. The problem, however, is that the activity becomes dangerous because you're sort of linking the activity with the symptoms. And that's not really the case. And I'm going to show you that in this video as well. But then you become the spoonie, and then you can prime yourself or your brain that activity is indeed very dangerous. And it can become very hard to break that cycle of being a spoonie. Another problem I have with this is that you're basically waiting for the symptoms to wind down. And that's, again, a giant waste of your time. The symptoms will eventually always wind down when you retreat yourself into a safe place, your bed. This can take, for example, a week or a few days, and it gradually winds down. But then you expose yourself again to the exact same danger via an activity, and it comes back again. So it doesn't really resolve the root problem. And then the question might become, well, Daniel, what should I do? Should I push through my symptoms? Or should I give in and go to bed? And I recommend doing neither of those things. I recommend going to the root of the problem. So why do some people have success with this approach? Well, because it gives you a sense of safety. If you need safety, then you are at the opposite place, which is danger. And when I think about danger, I think about the study from Dr. Navio called the cell danger response. And in this study, he explains that the limbic brain detects a danger and creates these symptoms of, in this example, a crash to protect you, to go back to your bed. Therefore, it can work to slowly build yourself up, but for the majority of people, it doesn't work. Therefore, what we see is that all these approaches become very complicated because they're trying to simplify things that are not really there. They make, for example, five faces, and each face is this and this, and it becomes a gradual approach then in this thing, but it's not linear. So then they make all kinds of theories and concepts about it. And before you know it, it gets really, really complicated, and you have to read thousands of books, and all the theories never seem to make sense in the long term. I think this is the biggest trap, to overcomplicate things. So to really simplify it, you either have symptoms or you don't. That's it. Symptoms or no symptoms. And if you would like to make that a little bit more complicated, then you can say, for example, well, I got mild symptoms or severe symptoms. And there are different kinds of symptoms. For example, mind-body symptoms. Mind-body symptoms, I'll come back to that later, are symptoms that the brain can create just for your protection. Think about migraines, depersonalization, fatigue, pain, etc. But there are also stress symptoms. Stress symptoms are the consequence of staying in the stress mode, the fight or flight mode, for a longer period of time. Think about tinnitus, for example. Then there are also healing symptoms. And healing symptoms, your body sort of becomes heavy. Maybe you develop a real fever and your body can restore itself. And this also makes you feel a little bit bad, of course. And then there are also organ symptoms. And with these organ symptoms, we see that an emotion attaches itself to an organ because it's ready to be released and to be processed. But until you do that, it sort of is a burden on the organ. And you can develop like acid reflux, POTS, difficulty breathing, etc. And then finally, there are release symptoms. And release symptoms are usually after a release, and I'll come back to that later. You remove the underlying stressor, which is the emotion on your organs or the emotion that the brain perceives as a danger, and you start crying. And then after that, you might get a headache and those kind of things. So those are release symptoms. And what we have to do with every chronic illness is to divide all the types of symptoms and put them in these boxes. And then we know exactly what to do. But they all need more or less the same thing, which is emotional release. Because even if you're stressed, meaning that you are in a state of resistance, if you remove that, what you are resisting, the body calms down instantly. The next myth is the false danger response. This is saying that the symptoms that are created by the limbic brain because it perceives a danger are not valid because there is no danger. And then people can pretend that there is safety when there actually isn't. I think that this is a huge form of gaslighting because we're really going to show you what the underlying reason is that the brain perceives a danger. And to talk more about the mind-body symptoms and the way that the brain can perceive danger and create symptoms to protect you, I'll present you some research. This is a summary, what I'm going to show you. And if you would like to read the full studies, then I put the names of them in the description. The symptoms are created by neurological and glandular changes in the body. These changes are, in turn, triggered by signals from the limbic brain working through the HPA axis and vagus nerve. The nervous system switches to fight or flight mode due to accumulated emotional stress. The limbic system in the brain detects an undesirable situation. It then stimulates the hypothalamus, which stimulates the pituitary gland, which stimulates the adrenal glands, which changes the muscles, blood circulation, digestion, and immune system. The changes in circulation cause brain fog and dizziness. Changes in digestion can cause irritable bowel syndrome. Changes to the immune system can cause infections, swollen glands, a sore throat, and feverishness. The hypothalamus synthesizes the optic nerve and disrupts the body clock, which can cause blurred vision, light and sound sensitivity, and sleep disturbances. The changes or tension in the muscles make the mitochondria burn up the ATP and glucose storage too fast. The muscles will then switch to an inefficient fuel source with lactic acid as a byproduct. This causes fatigue, muscle pain, and headaches. And it justifies the feelings of patients who claim to feel as if they had run a marathon. If you don't want to read hours of research, then I sort of made a summary back in 2017 and this blog that I also link below. And the name of the blog is called Developing the CFS Personality. So my summary of the mind-body explanation is like this. The brain creates symptoms to protect you. Those symptoms draw you away from your emotions. The emotions are on your organs, and the symptoms are everywhere but your organs. For example, your head, back, neck, and limbs. And it sort of distracts you. That's the whole goal, because it wants your attention away, but it's going to make you obsess about the symptoms, because that's its purpose. When you don't obsess about it, the brain will usually find another symptom that is going to do the trick. Therefore, you can't really trust your own brain and your own mind in your recovery, because it does whatever it can to make you go into a way that you are going to think and believe that the symptoms are justified and real, that there is something very wrong inside of your body. And the more you focus on that, the more you read research or you engage yourself with all kinds of protocols, the more obsessed you are, the better it works. And therefore, you're teaching your limbic brain that this is a great symptom and that you probably need more of it. And if this is all emotional, then I ask myself the question, if the emotion is the problem, then resolving the emotion should lead to normalization. And I tried that in the beginning by exposing myself to difficult situations and see what happened before I thought that the activities were actually causing the symptoms. And indeed, emotionally stressful situations were enhancing the symptoms, but in the beginning, I had no control over it whatsoever. But fast forward a few more years, and I discovered that I could really switch on and off my own symptoms. And I started replicating that with clients. And that's basically what I do right now in the release program. By learning how to release the underlying emotion and become symptom-free, you become back in charge again, back in charge of your life. And this is what Sabrina has to say about it.
Hi, I am Sabrina. In the beginning, I didn't really understand what was meant by doing a release, and I also felt a lot of resistance to do it. Then one day, I came home, I brought my daughter to school, and I felt again really exhausted. I also had some things to do, but I just couldn't do. I was laying in bed. And because I also felt that there was like it was some tension or emotion stuck in my body, I decided to try it again and to do a release. And this time something shifted. While I was doing the practice, I really started to cry like a little child. I felt a lot of anger. I felt a lot of sadness. But I also felt what was meant to feel the release. And for me, that was a game changer. After that, I experienced such a sense of release, and I could do some things that day. So for me, it's like doing releases now is like that the fatigue is not controlling me anymore, but that I'm back in control of the fatigue and of my life. So I'm really, really grateful that I found this program.
And she is not the only one. We've been doing this for multiple years right now, and we guarantee everyone at least one of those releases while they're in the program. But the real goal that I'm having with it is that everyone can master this within a year. Each symptom is caused by just one emotion. Just one. Find that emotion. Resolve it and the symptom is gone. But usually symptoms come back because people have suppressed more than just one emotion. Some people have suppressed terrible and difficult emotions. They were in the flight response or the freeze response their entire youth. Other people had a little bit minor trauma, and therefore you can't really compare those people. Some people might say that they recovered within a week. Some people even say that they recovered within the first few modules where we were just trying to calm you down a little bit. Therefore, it's become so hard to compare people. And we're more than happy to answer all your questions. We have weekly Q&A sessions, and you can just ask them directly towards us. I put the link in the description, and I'd like to see you there. Then the next myth that you often see is that there is something wrong with your body. usually symptoms start after a viral infection, for example. People also mention that they have mold. And before you know it, you're going to spend a whole lot of money on supplements to detox you from these types of things. What I've noticed is that those viral infections sort of becomes the cleaner inside of your cells. Because all these emotions, before you were ready to process them, they were stored inside of your cells. And these viruses help us to remove them from the cells. They're sort of like cleaners. But after that, when the emotions are ready, they can become stuck in your organs. But usually there's only one or two emotions at the same time stuck along your organs. Then there might be something wrong with your immune system, because we can see that all kinds of weird things are going on there. But we saw before already that this was all just created and directed by the limbic brain. Then people think it's genetics, because your mother had something similar like that, but you also inherited her emotional behavior, which is probably more likely. Stress is causing it. Well, I think that's obvious, because stress is being in a state of resistance. Resistance to what? Find that thing exactly that you're stressing about, allow it or deal with it, and the stress response immediately winds down. And the same counts for the ATP in the mitochondria. People think that they have a lack of energy and that they need to repair their mitochondria. But we saw before that it was just a conscious choice from your brain to make you go to bed, to make you feel safe in bed. Then the next myth, brain retraining is brain retraining. It's a bit funny, but people sometimes think that they've done a brain retraining program, and that's just what it is. But there is so much more about brain retraining. For example, in the past, all the brain retraining programs were about suppressing emotions, because they figured out, you know, that the limbic brain was perceiving emotions as a danger, and that these emotions can cause the fight or flight mode. And therefore, the best thing, in their opinion, was to suppress those feelings and emotions, to squeeze them back in the cells, to never ever have to deal with them again. And a lot of people had good results with that, and therefore it became a hype. But those results were mostly short-term results and not long-term results. But the damage was done anyway, and everybody wanted to do brain retraining. But nowadays, brain retraining is done in thousands of different ways, maybe. For example, the brain retraining that we do in the program is about teaching the limbic brain that those emotions are actually safe by slowly exposing you in a safe way towards them. That's exactly the opposite of those other programs. So therefore, there is not really a thing anymore called brain retraining. Because what is brain retraining? It's basically teaching yourself to do something in a new kind of way. That means it's learning, and it's learning anything new. Doesn't matter if it's productive, if it's good, if it's helpful, it really doesn't matter. Therefore, I stopped using the word brain retraining, because I was also pretty damaged by my experiences with those emotional suppression programs, especially when I became an emotional practitioner. I was like, what did they do with me? And I started becoming very negative and resentful about these kinds of methods. But right now the year is 2025, and if you're doing a brain retraining program, I hope for you that it's not about suppressing these emotions back into the cells, because that's not a long-term solution. You might be thinking, different things work for different people. It also sounds reasonable, right? But no. This is like the equivalent of shooting with a shotgun or shooting with a sniper. And shooting with a shotgun can cause a lot of damage, and it's not precise. Because in the end, everybody might need something different to get you that form of safety, but it's all about the same process. And some of the treatments can become 90% nonsense and 10% efficient, and they work. And other treatments are maybe 50% efficient, because in the end, it sort of becomes about the four steps that we do in the release program. Step one is creating safety by implementing healthy habits that reduce your stress response, especially dealing with unnecessary stress. The second step is then to prepare your limbic brain to deal with those emotions. And then the third step is to engage with those emotions and to try if you can get a release. But also, when you find the emotion exactly along your organ and you breathe through it, or you think about these emotions, for example, fear or shame, to see what it does to your symptoms and to hopefully be able to increase the amount of symptoms that you have on demand. And then finally, you go much deeper, you become like a sniper, and there are more advanced release tools as well. And this is what Jo Carver from the program said about doing one of those releases. So she says that she has POTS and that she has been struggling with too much adrenaline all week due to work stress, even though she is on medication. And she just did the fear release session in module 11, and she is astonished. She says, "I'm calm again." And she says that this is one phenomenal kit in the toolbox to get rid of symptoms. Just that alone was worth all her money. The next myth is about calming down the nervous system. You can calm your nervous system down all you want, every day, but it doesn't resolve the root problem of why you are in the fight or flight or freeze response to begin with. And I talked more about that in the video from last week that you can find there. I think that by now it becomes clear that being a patient is not an option when it comes to chronic fatigue syndrome or all these chronic diseases. You have to become an active. Every symptom has one emotion behind it. You can find that emotion along your organs. You breathe through it, you connect with it, you increase your symptoms, and then after some preparation work, you can resolve the emotion. So you cry, you shake, you burp, you shiver, maybe you vomit. And that's just maybe 1 or 2 minutes in total. And then after that, you can become symptom-free because the brain no longer detects a danger because the danger has been removed. And those symptoms, for example, the ATP shortage or that the immune system does weird things, they resolve themselves instantly. So thank you for watching. Please like and subscribe. You can like here and you can watch this other video here as well. And if you would really like to have an approach step by step to deal with your chronic illness, then consider joining the Release program, and I'm more than happy to see you there.